MacCast, Sunday, March 18th, 2012. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MacCast. Well, it's been quite a busy weekend for me, I imagine for some of you as well. And for those of you who may be thinking about heading down to your Apple store to get a new iPad, it sounds like they're still in pretty good supply. So this time around, it looks like Apple was able to produce enough to meet demand. We still have to wait to find out what that demand was, if it was higher or lower. A lot of us are still trying to figure out that analysis, and I'm certainly going to be talking about that on future episodes of the MacCast. But what I thought we'd do today is, I know you probably have some questions. If you haven't purchased a new one, you have some questions about maybe which model to get. Should I get one? Is my current iPad 1 or 2 okay? Can I still get by with that? And I thought it'd be good to try and answer some of those questions. And I figured the best way to do that, because I think the iPad is such a personal device that it would be best to get different perspectives from a bunch of different people. So I'm going to give you my opinions on the matter. And then I did a series of interviews with a bunch of Mac podcasters who also received new iPads this week and asked them similar kinds of questions about how they're going to use them, which models they bought and why, and those sorts of things. So I think this is going to be a really informational episode if you're planning on getting a new iPad, or maybe even if you're not, or it might even prompt you to hold on to your current one and save you some money. So I think there's a lot in this for a lot of different types of users. So stay tuned for that. Before we get into it, though, I do want to take a quick moment and thank one of my show sponsors, and that's Circus Ponies, makers of Notebook, which is just a great application. It's something I've used for years and continue to use and find new uses for it all the time. And I think that's one of the testaments of a great piece of software, is that if it works its way into your daily workflow and it's something that you hold on to and continue to use. And Notebook is certainly one of those applications for me. I think the key features is that it allows you to take notes, obviously. I think the one thing that really makes it unique is the metaphor, the interface. You know, a lot of people are talking about how interfaces are moving towards these real world style things. So you see Apple doing a lot with things like iCal or the address book, but Notebook has kind of been doing that forever. It's like your physical notebook, but on your Mac. So you can have different styles of papers, different styles of bindings, not just tweaks the UI, but makes it comfortable and familiar to work with. And then once you get in there, there's all the powerful tools. So you can take notes, you can make lists. It has great drawing tools. So if you want to annotate something, if you want to drop in an image or a PDF, you can do that and then start taking notes right on top of it. So you can draw on top of it. You can drop sticky notes. You can organize stuff with little flags, just like you would in a physical notebook. So all of those things that you expect to do are there, and what that lends to the application is the ability to throw in thoughts, throw in ideas, put stuff together, and really get that organized, and then not have all that paper and shelf space that you have to take up. You can have all kinds of different notebooks for different projects and things that you're working on. So it is a really great application, and I think the best way to experience it is to just try it out. So they have free trials available on their website. They have great tutorials there, lots of information. So you should head over to circusponies.com and check it all out. And a big thank you to them for their support of the MacCast. And so while there's a lot of hype going on around the launch of the new iPad, that always happens with Apple events and new products and things like that, it's getting really great reviews. If you've been out reading the reviews, a lot of the reviews are saying, you know, Apple's leaping ahead. They're once again leading the pack in this market. I think they rightly point out that Apple's on the high end of the scale in terms of pricing, but also really leading in terms of having a full-featured, full-sized tablet. You know, obviously the Kindle Fire came on the scene this year and has made great inroads in the media consumption, smaller tablet form factor, and smaller price point. I think it's a great device. I know a number of friends and family members who've picked up Kindle Fires and really love it. But in the space and for the types of applications that the iPad works with, it really is the device to get. But it comes at a price. And I think that's right for many people to point out. But overall, the reviews are very, very positive, saying if you're looking for a tablet, really the iPad is the one to get. And I would agree with most of that. But the thing that a lot of those reviews don't take into account, or that happens when the hype is going on, right? Everybody's saying, oh, you got to get a new iPad. It's amazing. It's wonderful. I think they don't often think about application or usage. And this goes through technology in general. It's easy to get caught up in the newest, latest, and greatest thing. And I really like to try and step back from that and go, okay, what is the application? And then what are you going to use it for? How do we apply the right technology, the right product to the kinds of things that you want to do with it? So I think that's an important thing to consider when you're trying to make these buying decisions. And so to separate that, to kind of understand that, I think the best thing to do is just to understand the product and what the features bring. You know, it's great that those bullet points are thrown out there, the resolutionary new Retina display. You know, how much better really is it? New cameras, are we really going to use those cameras, or is it just something that's kind of a nice to have? So when I got my new iPad, I was very excited, of course, because I'm the Mac geek that I am, the Apple fan, and I was waiting here all day. The FedEx truck couldn't get here fast enough, of course, and I'm in that camp that, you know, not only just for the podcast to be able to talk to you about it, you know, but I like having the latest and greatest stuff. And, you know, my iPad 2 is going to get handed down. And I already told you that I sold the iPad 1s to kind of help fund this because, you know, it's expensive. We all go through these things, right? Most of us aren't made of money. Some of us are. And if you are, you're very lucky. Go out and get the latest and greatest thing and really enjoy it. But for the rest of us, you know, we have to figure out how to pay for these things. And so you need to justify those decisions in a number of different ways. And so the iPad finally got here. I did an unboxing video. I took a little different take on it, though, this time around. So if you haven't seen that, you can head over to maccast.com. I posted it up there. I also posted a bunch of images if you want to see. But it's, you know, it looks surprisingly like the iPad 2 in all respects, in terms of the box, in terms of, you know, the accessories that are in there and stuff like that. So if you already have an iPad 2, you're going to be kind of wondering, okay, what are the things that really, really make it different? And of course, most of us before the iPad came out, the thing that we pointed to was this new screen, the Retina display, double resolution. But how much better really is it? So that was one of the first things that I wanted to see when I got it out of the box. I also wanted to play around with the cameras and see how much better are the cameras. I don't know really how much I'm going to use those, but so those were the first couple things that I started testing. And when I started looking at the screen, there is an obvious difference when you're just looking at icons, looking at text and stuff like that. The stuff that's optimized for Retina, the Retina display is gorgeous. But when you start to really take a hard look at what are the differences, like how noticeable is it in normal daily usage when you're not getting down and sort of analyzing the pixels and really looking at it. And I had to really think hard about this because I never had a problem with the iPad 2. I thought the iPad 2 was a gorgeous, wonderful display. And I think I've talked about this on the show. You know, many people say, you know, I got my iPhone 4 with a Retina display and suddenly my iPhone 3GS, it was terrible. It was awful. To me, I don't think it's that extreme. I think that when I'm looking at it, yes, it's better. Text is crisper. It's brighter. I don't know how much brighter. You can play around with the brightness controls, and I think you can get the two to match up pretty close. But I think if you just handed the two devices to someone without any context, without them being right side by side, I think very few of us could tell the difference or would really notice the difference at a normal reading angle. And I think that's the key there. So it is evolutionary. I don't know if I can call it revolutionary or resolutionary like Apple is saying. It is beautiful, and it's a good jump forward, a good step forward. I think if you're doing a lot of text reading, you're going to appreciate that the text is crisper. But I think for your average user, they're not going to notice that as a huge difference. And so depending, once again, upon your application, that may or may not be a selling factor for you. It may not be something that you want to pay the extra money for, especially if you already have an iPad that you're very happy with. So I think that's the first thing. The cameras, much better, vastly improved from what we had on the iPad 2. No doubt about it. I was taking some sample pictures and just the sharpness of the images, because you have the jump in megapixels, is really good. The one thing I noticed as I was out and about trying to play around with the camera and just take pictures is that I think because of its size and its added weight, I will point out the new iPad is just slightly heavier, I think 0.3 or 4 pounds. I don't have the stats in front of me right now. I covered it on the last MacCast if you want the exact number. But what that translates into is I do notice an actual weight difference when I hold my iPad 1 and 2 in my hand. You can tell that when I hold my iPad 2 and the new iPad in my hand, you can tell that there is a weight difference. The new iPad definitely feels a little bit heavier. But once again, if you don't have both in your hands at the same time, I don't think you'll notice that the new iPad is particularly heavy, you know, quote unquote heavy. But what it did translate into when I was taking pictures is, I think because of the size and the weight, it was harder for me to get stable pictures. I noticed I was getting kind of blurry pictures, but it was mostly because I was moving around a little bit as I was trying to take the thing. So I still don't think the iPad is the best device for capturing still photos. Video, of course, is gorgeous. The 1080p video works very well, and that's going to be fun to play with and edit around in iMovie. But how practical for most people, for most users, is it going to be? I don't really know. I think it's nice to have the good camera in there for those few moments where you might need a camera and you don't have anything else with you. But I think the average person is going to pull out their cell phone or their point-and-shoot camera to capture images. So I don't rate that very high on the sort of must-have feature list. And so once you get beyond that, you have the processor. I noticed some reviewers are saying that it feels snappier. Comparing it to my iPad 2, I didn't notice a huge improvement. We're talking, you know, milliseconds, less than a second in terms of the performance differences I'm seeing in most applications, just launching apps, opening up mail, things like that. Surfing the web doesn't appear to be that much faster, although you'll hear as we get to the interviews, experience is different. Some people perceive that differently. And I think on that end, maybe that's the point where if you're really considering a purchase and you're on the fence, you might want to head to your Apple store and just do a comparison. You know, sit down with the devices, play around with it, and see if you really notice the difference. Because that, at the end of the day, that's what it comes down to. The sort of applications, are we going to be really use? How are we going to be using these things personally? And how much better is it? Is it, you know, worth the added cost? And so it's funny, I think I'm sitting here listening to this, and it sounds like I'm trying to talk you out of a new iPad. I'm not. If you don't have an iPad, if you want to upgrade, it's awesome. I love mine. I absolutely love it. But I think it's just easy to get caught up in the hype, and I'm trying to avoid that. I'm trying to avoid, you know, just going off the deep end, which is very easy for me to do, as you can probably imagine. So, you know, those were the first two features that I really wanted to try out. The other one that I think actually is the sleeper feature, and I think a lot of people are going to find it very useful once you start using it, is the dictation. You wouldn't think it's that big of a deal. And I've had it on my iPhone 4S, and I really haven't used it that much. I have a feeling across the board with this new device, I probably am going to be using it a little bit more. Once again, I think depending upon where you're using it, if you're in your home office like I am, I think it's very easy to hit the microphone button there on the keyboard and now dictate an email or a note or an idea, a thought, something like that. And it's surprisingly accurate. And more so than that, I think the key is that it's surprisingly fast. I don't know what magic technology they've put in there. But it happens very, very quickly, at least on my home network. You do need an active internet connection to make it work. And as a matter of fact, I think I read one place that says, if you don't have an active internet connection, you won't even see the button, which I think that's a great UI thing, you know, so you don't have the option if you don't have internet. But if you do, it's surprisingly fast. And I think that was part of the 5.1 update, because it seems faster on my iPhone 4S also. You know, you don't have full-blown Siri in there, but I think that feature, if you find that you have a hard time typing on a tablet, your current iPad, that might be a feature you want to try out. And that could be something that is really important to a lot of people. And I think that's it. You know, I haven't played around with the graphics stuff yet too much. I think if you're planning on using your iPad for heavy photo editing and processing, video applications, if 3D high-end gaming is a really big deal for you on a tablet device, then I do think the new processor is going to be a nice upgrade. But overall, at the end of it, as I've been playing around with it for the past 24 hours, I think the conclusion I've come to is this is a nice evolutionary step. It's a nice jump up. The pricing didn't go up. So I think Apple's done a really great job once again of moving the iPad forward. But is it an absolute must-have device for every person out there? I think the answer really is no. I think it's great for a lot of people, and depending upon your situation. And you're going to ultimately have to decide that for yourself, what type of person you are. You know, if you're the person like me who has to have the latest and greatest, then you're going to absolutely love it. If you're a person that has an iPad 1 and you've been waiting to do that next upgrade, this is a huge upgrade for someone moving from a 1 to the new iPad, for all those obvious reasons that you get everything that was in the iPad 2, plus these added enhancements and features that are in the new iPad. So I think there's going to be a lot of people upgrading from the 1. If you already have a 2 and you're really happy with it, and you just are not sure that there's enough in this one to warrant a new purchase, you may be right. But again, you're going to have to make that assessment for yourself. So I'm hoping this episode is going to help a lot of us with these sort of buying decisions and things like that. And so you don't just have to take my word for it. I went out and I grabbed a number of Mac podcasters that are friends and who I've worked with for the last few years, peers, and asked them a lot of these same kinds of questions. So who you're going to hear from here, I have Katie Floyd from Mac Power Users at MacPowerUsers.com. I have Allison Sheridan from the NosillaCast podcast, and you can find that at podfeet.com. And then Victor Cahiao of the Typical Mac User podcast at TypicalMacUser.com. And then finally, Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer, also a co-host of mine along with Michael Johnston on the We Have Communicators podcast. And so you can find Jeff's work at MacObserver.com, and of course at WeHaveCommunicators.com. And all of these podcasts are available on iTunes. You can just search the iTunes store and subscribe to them there. So these interviews are going to happen in that order, so you know who's talking when. And let's just dive into it. Well, hey, Katie, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Adam.
Yeah? You got the new iPad.
I have it in my hot little hands right here.
You do, and you didn't have to run out into the street this time?
No, I don't. You know, that comes up a lot this time of year. What Adam is referring to is there was an infamous incident 2 years ago when the original iPad launched, when I was caught in the shower by the FedEx guy, and he came really insanely early. He did apologize and say that I was his first delivery of the day and he was getting an early start.
Yep.
And heard the doorbell ring and then immediately had to very quickly run downstairs so as to not miss him, and had to run down the street to catch him, but got him.
it's a big deal. They'll leave the little note. They don't wait around too long. They're busy. Oh, no. So
and when the original iPad launched, I think it was on a Saturday. So it was like if you didn't get it that day, you weren't going to get it until Monday.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, okay. So what I wanted to ask you about is just the whole experience, some of your buying decisions. I'm asking a bunch of different podcasters this, different people I know, because people get curious about this stuff. And I'm curious to find out why people made certain decisions and things like that. So I'm assuming that it sounds like you did decide to have it delivered rather than go to an Apple store.
I did, and I was working today. I was actually in court this morning, so I had it delivered to my work address, which Apple will sometimes do and sometimes not. I think that's an issue with the iPhone, but the iPad they had no issue with. So,
interesting.
Yeah. No drama. My receptionist signed for it and brought it back to my office.
I had always heard they wouldn't deliver to businesses. A couple people had mentioned that to me, so
I don't know. My business is kind of in a residential neighborhood, so I think if you didn't know, you probably wouldn't pick the address out as a business. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So did it arrive bright and early like your original one?
Not as bright and early. No, it was perfect timing. I got back from court around 10 and the iPad arrived around 10:30. So it gave me a time to settle down and get back in the office and things situated.
Okay. So backing up a little bit. So it sounds like you had an original iPad. You didn't have an iPad 2.
That's correct.
Any reason why you didn't upgrade to the 2, and then why now with the 3?
The two, interesting. I thought about it. The two didn't seem as significant an upgrade from the one, although maybe some people would argue that the three is not as significant an upgrade from the two as the two was from the one. Just personally, I was building a house right at the time the iPad 2 came out and was making big financial decisions. And it was pretty easy for me to say, you know, need versus want. And yep. Where can I spend my money at that particular time? And then when the iPad 3 came out, or the third generation iPad, it was a big enough upgrade for me to justify it. And, you know, I don't know. Did I need it? No, I didn't need it. My original iPad would have been perfectly capable for the things that I do for another year or so. But I thought it was a big enough upgrade to justify.
Good, cool. So your iPad 1, it was still serving your needs then. Because I find that interesting. Because, yeah. You know, I was kind of thinking, you know, my iPad 2 has been great, and I don't think I needed to necessarily replace my iPad 2. But I think about my iPad 1s, which I pull out every once in a while and play around with. And they still are very capable machines, but I don't know if I could, after having the 2, I could go back.
Well, thankfully, I didn't have that experience. I didn't have someone give me a 2 and then have to go back. And I've only been playing with this third generation iPad for, you know, an couple of hours off since I've got it. And it's definitely zippy. I mean, no question it's zippy and pages load quickly. But I was not a heavy gamer, so nothing I did on the iPad was extremely graphics intensive. I used it for word processing, a lot of consumption. I used it for email. I used it for calendaring. I used it for some remote access into the office, mainly for access to things. You know, I used it for some video, for a lot of reading and things like that. So I wasn't doing intensive tasks on it. I wasn't playing any graphics intensive games or things like that.
Right. So along those lines, then, is there something specific that with the iPad 3 or iPad 2, you know, some of those newer features that you think you're going to benefit from in terms of the stuff that you do?
I think the screen is what everybody's saying, obviously. Right. The Retina display is so sharp and so clear and so much easier on the eyes, I think, to read on the iPad 3. And keep in mind, this morning, there was nothing wrong with my iPad.
Right.
It's just better this afternoon now that I have the new one. And
keep going.
So that was a main point. The other issues, you know, honestly, the camera doesn't mean a whole lot to me. I don't think I'm going to be one of those people holding a camera up and taking videos with my iPad. I've got my iPhone in my pocket to do that, although it's a decent feature. I was really excited about voice dictation. A little disappointed that we didn't see full-blown Siri, because I've still got an iPhone 4 and not a 4S, because I'm on that every other year upgrade cycle with the iPhone. Mm-hmm. But I'm very excited about voice dictation, because that was the one feature that I most wanted to come to the iPad. And it's here, and it's pretty good from what I've been playing with.
Yeah, having played with it on the iPhone 4, 4S, it's really great. So I guess this is on the 4S, right, not the 4.
Right, just on the 4S, not on the 4. Now you've got apps on the 4, like Dragon and things like that, but just the little bit that I've played with it on the iPad seems to have blown it away. And not, I know, yeah. Don McAllister was tweeting earlier, he seems to suspect that the microphone on the iPad is just excellent, and I can't disagree from my voice dictation experiments.
Yeah. The other thing is something with I don't know, 5.1 seemed to speed up dictation on my devices. So I don't know if Apple tweaked or optimized that a little bit. Because it still, I believe, has to go out to the internet. I'm pretty sure it goes out to the internet.
It does. In fact, it will not work if you don't have a data connection at all. That microphone button is just gone.
Yeah. So I don't know if it does any pre-processing or how that magic works, but it is pretty amazing how accurate it is. And I love the fact that you can use many of the common Dragon dictation things in terms of speaking, punctuation, and a number of the commands work, which is kind of cool.
Well, I dictate all day long at work, and which was really surprising to me when I first started my career. Being relatively young, I grew up typing, and I can type, you know, 80 plus, 100 plus words a minute. So I figured, well, this is silly. I'm going to be typing everything I do. Why would I dictate? But one of my senior partners gave me a dictaphone when I first started, you know, when I was just a very, very young associate, and said, no, you will learn how to use this dictaphone, if nothing else, just to learn how to do it. And I dictate quite a bit at work, because it's so easy just to dictate off a quick letter, and hand it to your assistant and let her do it. Now, the iPad's not quite that smart. I can't say, hey, this is this letter to that person on that thing that, you know, that we've been working on. It doesn't right. figure that out yet, but... But once you get into the dictation mindset of the punctuation and new paragraph, which I dictate when I dictate to my assistant, it flows.
Yeah. So let me ask you which model and why? How did you know? Because a lot of people wonder about that decision. How much storage do I need? Which do I need, the Wi-Fi 3G or 4G now, I guess? So
right. Well, you know, I struggled with this decision greatly when the original iPad came out. And more just kind of on a whim ended up with the 16 gigabyte Wi-Fi only version because I couldn't figure out really what to do. And that has suited me perfectly adequately for the last 2 years that I've been using it. And I typically run with about 8 gigs free, the exception being when I'm traveling, I tend to load up, you know, media and TV shows that I've recorded off the TiVo and things like that. Mm-hmm. So the only time I really fill up the iPad is when I'm traveling, which is not that often, you know, that I'm going cross country or anything like that and need enough media to get me across a flight. So I debated about it. My biggest concern was with the increased Retina display graphics, that all of these apps are getting so much bigger. Is all of a sudden that space going to disappear even more? And it did, but I'm pretty selective about what apps I keep on my iPad at any given time. And I'm finding that, you know, I've pruned my apps a little bit and I've gotten rid of some stuff that I don't use. And I'm actually running now at about 10 gigabytes free since doing my restore. So I've recovered 2 mystery gigabytes somewhere from this morning. I'm not sure if that's data that didn't fully restore or just caching and stuff that I've recovered. So I've yet to find out where that 2 gigs came from.
Yeah. Yeah. You obviously don't have the app clutter that I have. I need to start better managing that. So I went much larger because I find that the majority of my iPad's taken up with apps. But
right. Go ahead.
I was just going to say I could probably be more judicious about that. But I'm lazy.
I have no music on my iPad at all. I do have iTunes Match and I have that enabled if I wanted something on my iPad. But my iPhone is with me pretty much everywhere I go. And I did buy the higher level iPhone so that I could store almost all of my music on the iPhone.
Yeah, I got rid of my music too with iTunes Match. So and that's worked out just fine, especially on the iPad side. I would agree. I'm tending to use my iPhone more for music than my iPad. So that absolutely makes sense. So let's talk about, you got it at work. You know, many of us would be like, oh, I got to go home. I got to get it set up, right?
Right. But I was worried about that.
Yeah, we don't have that problem now, right?
We don't. Yeah, and I will tell you, before I went to work this morning, I did a full backup of my iPad tethered to iTunes, and I did throw my MacBook Air in my bag just in case I needed it, but I never pulled it out. I have iCloud set up, and I did a full backup to iCloud. I checked and made sure that it ran. And restored via iCloud this morning. Like I said, I got mine around 10:30 Eastern time, which means I think I lucked out because the West Coast stores weren't even open yet. My understanding is they started selling at 8. So I got mine just before your stores opened over there. And I, within a matter of minutes, had my iPad set up and running and all of my settings restored. And then I would say ballpark it took for about 4 gig of apps to completely restore themselves. And I wasn't watching it the whole time because I was working and stuff, somewhere between 45 minutes and an hour, because it restores all of your settings. It remembers which apps you had installed and where, but then it re-downloads those apps from the app store. So that's what took the most time. And what was really cool is you could prioritize the apps. So if you tapped on an app, it would queue it up for being the next one to download.
Huh. Interesting. Yeah, I have not done the iCloud backup thing. I've been a little leery about it because, you know, when you go to activate it, it says, well, now it's not going to backup to, you know, auto backup to iTunes anymore.
Well, and that's the trick. It's not going to auto backup. You can still force a backup right. to iTunes.
Right. But it's just one of those things. It's like, oh, I'm getting more and more comfortable with the cloud and having stuff in the cloud. And I've used iCloud for contact syncing and all that other stuff, but I just haven't made the leap to app backup. But I think it's time. I think with this one, and I even thought about doing it before my new iPad came and trying that whole process, but I went to flip it on and it was estimating like about 2 hours to do the first, you know, the first big backup. So right. I was like, oh, no, I can't wait that long because the new iPad's going to get here and I'm going to want to just set it up. So I think I am going to pull the trigger on that. So overall, you said that experience was pretty seamless then, it sounds like.
Yeah, that was a seamless experience. A couple of tips I would point out is, one, you obviously want to make sure that you have a complete full backup and that it's up to date. And in my case, I did one, I think I did one last night, but you know, made sure that it ran last night before I went to bed. And I did another one first thing this morning, because your iPad will not back up unless it's plugged in on Wi-Fi and on the lock screen, which with these iPads having such great battery life, I didn't plug my iPad in every night. So sometimes I would go a week or more between backups just because I wasn't plugging my iPad in. So you want to make sure that you get that backup done. The other thing is, if you're trying to save space in iCloud, you can customize your backup and decide what you want to back up and what you don't. Camera roll wasn't a really big deal for me because I didn't have a lot on the camera roll because I didn't have a camera on the original iPad, but a lot of people, that's the biggest bulk in their backup. So you may want to make sure you dump your photos off before you do that, or exclude that from your backup, which is less of an issue now with PhotoStream.
Right. And so I guess last question would be, after you got it set up, what was the first thing that you did you wanted to check out, or just your first impressions?
First impressions. Obviously, the first thing you're going to see when you turn on is the screen. The screen is just beautiful. I've actually got a picture of the Golden Gate Bridge as my background that I took either a couple years ago when we were at Macworld. And it's this gorgeous picture. I've actually got it blown up on my wall, and it was beautiful on my original iPad. And it's pixelated.
Yeah.
So I've obviously got a lower res version on here that I'm going to have to update. So the screen is gorgeous. It's definitely snappy. I'm very happy with the voice quality. And what I'm really looking forward to checking out is AirPlay. That was one of the reasons I upgraded to this iPad that I didn't allude to before. Is I cut the cable a couple of months ago, and I'm using an Apple TV right now for a lot of my content, and didn't have the ability to AirPlay stream with my original iPad. So I'm really looking forward to that with the iPad 3.
Yeah, that's a really cool feature, in the AirPlay mirroring and all that stuff. I'm using AirPlay more and more for all kinds of things. So, well, very cool. Thank you for kind of sharing your experience with us. So you are part of Mac Power Users.
Yeah, I'm the other half of the Mac Power Users.
Yeah, so do you want to tell everybody about that and tell people where they can kind of follow you and do all that sort of thing?
Yeah, Mac Power Users is a podcast. It's distributed through the 5x5 network. You can find it at macpowerusers.com or over on the 5x5 website. I host that over with David Sparks, and you should check it out. We do about a show a week, a couple of shows a month, and we do two things. One thing is we take one specific technology topic and we focus on it in depth. So we recently did shows on remote access, and we've got a show coming up on dumping Google. And then the other thing we do is we talk to interesting people in the Mac community about how they get stuff done with their Mac. So we recently spoke with an Apple developer, and this week I think we're talking to a psychologist and a physician about how they use Macs in their practice. So it's, people find it interesting, I think.
Very cool stuff. And you and I are occasionally, I think, on Mac Roundtable now and
That's right. That's
and a good one. On David as well, right?
Correct.
So whenever we can be, this is another place people can check us out. Oh, thank you, Katie, so much.
Thanks, Adam.
Hey, Allison, how you doing?
Well, I never have fun on big event days. I always have a miserable time.
You do? Well, do you want to tell us why?
Yeah, well, so I can't win. I mean, nobody is more excited about new Apple gadgets than me. I mean, it's just been the heartbeat of my life for the last week and a half. And I've been tweeting, is it here yet, for the last week. And I tracked my FedEx package, watching to wait until it moved. And it was just an hour away. And then this morning it moved to a better facility that was closer by. And then it got on the truck. And I should back up. The reason I'm waiting is because when I did the iPhone 4, I waited in line, and it was horrible. I got in line at 6 in the morning, and I got it 10 hours later. And I swore I would never, ever, ever stand in that line again. So I did this, wait-at-home thing, took a day off of work. So I'm sitting there waiting, watching my device barely move, and it gets to a closer facility, and then it gets on a truck, and I wait, and I wait, and I wait, and I keep waiting, and I keep tweeting. And finally, at about, 10 or 11 o'clock, a buddy of mine lives a mile and a half away. He gets his. So I know it's got to be on the same truck, right? It's got to be here any minute now. And I wait, and I wait, and I wait. I don't go to the gym. I don't go to lunch. I don't do anything. I wait by my house. And then at about 2:30, the FedEx thing changed to saying that I had told them to deliver it later.
Oh, no.
I have never seen this thing before. It was the strangest thing. And it just said, yeah, no, you don't really want to do it more. It said delivery exception in bright red letters. And I didn't know what to do. And so a friend of mine and I were both waiting for them at my house. And so we called and screamed at the FedEx people and stomped our tiny little foots and argued with them for, I don't know, 20 minutes. And they said, yeah, well, like there were a lot of packages today. It was really hard. So at this point, I get a note from a friend of mine telling me that the Apple store where I waited 10 hours in line, yeah, they got them. You can walk right.
Yeah, apparently a lot of the Apple stores have them and you can just walk right in and get them.
So we drove over to the nearby Apple store where I had waited 10 hours, if I'd like to remind you of that. And we walked in, we bought them, and we drove home. And as I'm driving out to my house, there's a FedEx truck pulling away from my house.
Hmm.
So I pulled the car diagonally across the road to block him, but he had gotten out of the car already and he was running across the street to deliver something. So I ran him down in the street and I said, did you just deliver something to my house? And he says, oh, don't worry about it. I gave it to your neighbor. So this is two iPads. This is two 64 gig iPad Verizons. And I said, you just put $2,000 worth of equipment at somebody else's house on whose authority? And he says, my boss said that we really had to deliver this one today.
Because you had called.
Yeah. Well, if they told us they were going to come right away, we would have stayed. We would have gotten them. So now I have three iPads at my house.
Ooh.
So,
I want to live with you.
Well, that's not counting the other two I already had. But so now I have to go back and return them. But the good news is I don't have to go back to FedEx. So would you believe I just finished syncing my iPad? It's like 5:56. It was about 20 minutes ago. It looks really nice.
Yeah. I believe that. So you've been waiting all day. So I want to get a little bit of the backstory real quick on, you know, why you picked which ones you did. And also, what are you upgrading from?
So I have an iPad 1, 64 gig with AT&T. And I did the unlimited plan. And I'm sure I didn't use anywhere near what I should have to abuse them. But because they were so snarky about the whole unlimited doesn't mean unlimited thing, I decided to stick it to the man and I switched to Verizon.
You switched now, to Verizon.
I'm sure, you know, it's just a different devil, right? But it just made me a little bit happy. And I was delighted when I found out after I did it that Verizon would do the tethering thing because I've never had tethering before because I wasn't willing to pay for it. So had I known it, I would have definitely picked Verizon. And also, Verizon's LTE service around where I live is really, really good. I have a Verizon MiFi actually from work, and that thing rocks. I mean, I get amazing speeds on it where I live. So that was a big consideration for me.
And you just confirmed right before we started recording that you get an LTE in your little menu bar, right? It actually says LTE, not 4G like my iPhone 4S on AT&T, the fake 4G.
Right. Well, when I first turned the thing on, it said 4G, and I'm like, I haven't even told you my credit card number. How could you get 4G? So that was kind of funny, but it seemed to have stopped saying that. I just noticed it's getting warm.
Yeah. Oh, the iPad itself?
Yeah.
Hmm.
On the left side.
It's a little concerning.
I had heard something about warmth. Somebody had asked somebody who had one already.
My iPad 2 gets warm. So you upgraded from a 1 to a 3, so you skipped the 2.
Yeah, I just didn't see that I had a problem to solve with it. And I have a 2 from work, and I didn't really notice a speed difference between the two. Mm-hmm. And since I put them in big fat cases anyway, I didn't really notice the weight or the thickness. So I didn't see a great advantage to having a crappy camera. You know, that'd be kind of fun. One thing I did really want is I've started to use AirPlay more and more on my Apple TV. And so now to be able to AirPlay everything is going to be really, really fun. I can't wait to do that.
That's funny. Katie Floyd said the same thing. So on storage, the iPad 1s, how big were those? And you said, I think both yours are now 64. So you went all the way most storage. So why?
I don't think I have a good justification. When I first did it, I figured this was stupid, but I don't know. I felt like it. So I went with 64. And only recently did I get up to around 32 gig that I've used. And the whole reason for that is because All My Children was canceled. You see, I used to watch all my children at lunch, but now all my children is canceled. So I started watching video podcasts, and watching video podcasts on iTunes is kind of a pain, and doing, you know, syncing and blah, blah, blah. So I started using Downcast, and now my Downcast library is exactly like my iTunes library. It's got a bunch of stuff in it. And I go, oh, I don't want to watch that. So I've got all these video podcasts in high def that I don't watch. Well, I watch some of them, right? But you know how it is. It's like you look at your closet and you got nothing to wear, but there's 70 pieces of clothing in there. So that seemed to start filling it up for me. Again, this is one of those after the fact things. Now that they're telling us that iPad apps are 2 to 3 times the size they were before, I'm kind of a, you know, app slut. So I just deleted 150 apps from my iPhone and iPad about a week ago. Yeah. That's how I got rid of, you know, it's just like, I'm not using you. So I don't know how many I have, but I mean, I'm not that bad. But still, if they're 2 to 3 times the size, I'll chew up 64 pretty easy, I think.
Yeah, I'm an app junkie. So the iPad ones, were they getting full? What size were those?
I actually only had one iPad one. It was 64 gig before, and I'd used a little over half of it, I think, around 32 gig.
Used that storage. You know, I think the rule, what do they say, is you're always going to use what you have. You know, you're going to fill up what you have. I tend to do that, so that makes sense.
Yeah, the one case where I didn't do that was actually on the iPhone 4S. I actually went low on that, and I went low on my iPod Nano, and that's primarily because I don't listen to music. So I knew that I wasn't going to chew up this giant chunk with music, and I don't watch, and you know, especially with an Nano, I just went for the bottom of the line because that's just podcasts and just audio.
Right. So you said you just finished the setup. How did the setup go for you, and how did you do it?
I made sure I plugged in my old iPad in before I and ran a full backup, and then I plugged in the new one and flipped through a couple of screens, said what country I was from. Gave it my email address. It said, is this you? Gave me my location information, that kind of thing. And it started to sync. It did take a long time. It might be all those videos. But that probably took maybe, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes for that to sync over. But everything was done by the time, like I said, it took like 15, 20 minutes. But it looks exactly like my iPad original one, but except really, really clear.
Yeah. And so, you just got a... You just got turned into a frog or something. Was that you or me?
Oh, sorry. I didn't know I was sounding like a frog. I did get a text message. Was that it?
Yeah, it was. It was the fairy.
Oh, the burka
noise. No, sorry. The fairy noise. That's fine. I use the same noise on my text messages too. By the way,
sorry about that.
No, it's great. A little magic in the podcast is always a good thing.
So
you didn't do that. Do you do iCloud backup? Because I don't do that. I haven't done that yet, but I think I'm going to start.
It just seems like that's got to take forever, doesn't it?
Well, that was the thing. I right before I was going to do my iCloud backup, and I think it said 2 hours for the first one. But like once it's done, I think it just does the differences. So it doesn't take that long. And setting up, Katie did her setup that way and said it went beautifully. So, and I've heard that from a number of people. So I might start moving toward that thing, because then you can get the device, you don't even need your computer, you just turn it on and it sets itself up.
Hey, there you go. That sounds nice.
Yeah.
Hey,
I gotta try that one day.
Single coolest thing to look at on the iPad so far is maps. I can actually read the names of the streets.
Okay, so that's great leading, because that was going to be my next question to you. So after you got it, what was the first thing that you wanted to check out, and what were your first impressions?
First thing I wanted to check out was mail, and dang, That text is just beautiful. I just love sharp text. I have to use Windows at work, and I just spent, 20 minutes resetting the clear text to make sure it was as sharp as possible, and so happy when that was done. I mean, it just looks so much better. But by the way, I use a 9-year-old Apple Cinema display on my crappy HP laptop.
Hey, that works.
I know. I won't give it up.
So you wanted to see the text first.
Yeah.
That was kind of your first. Do you do a lot of reading outside of mail on your iPad as well?
I gave up paper books, much to the consternation of my daughter. and so I'm really, actually, I had not looked into, I'm just about to register my Kindle. I haven't looked at that. I was happy to see yesterday they did have an update to the Kindle app, because I had heard that iBooks look spectacular, but Kindle looked kind of cruddy. So,
yeah. That Retina display is really,
I would have bought it if that was the only thing.
You think so? That would have been the only thing you would have upgraded for? So
yeah,
is there other stuff that, you know, you were excited to upgrade for?
Like I said, the tethering and, mm-hmm. and having 4G, that sounds really, really fun. Mm-hmm. I like that idea because I'm not on Wi-Fi most of my day. I'm stuck in an area where we don't have free Wi-Fi or even paid for Wi-Fi of any sort. So I have to rely on 3G, 4G.
Yeah. Do you care about the camera at all? Does that do anything for you?
Yeah, I'm sure I will. I love taking pictures and taking video and stuff, so I'm sure I'm going to be that guy, you know.
Yeah, look at my iPad, I'm taking video.
Yeah, I'll be that. I'll be the stooge. It'll be awesome.
Well, very cool. I better let you get back to playing with it since you it doesn't sound like you've had much hands-on with it yet.
Yeah, it's killing me.
All righty. Well, thanks for chatting with us. And just so people know who you are and what you do and where they can kind of find you, you want to give them that information?
Oh, I'd hate to, Adam. That'd be terrible to have to plug my show. I am Allison Sheridan of the NoSilicast Mac podcast, hosted over at podfeet.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at podfeet.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot, Adam. Have fun.
So, hey, Victor, how are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Have you had some time with the new iPad?
A little bit, probably not as much as I should have, but yeah, I've had a little bit.
Yeah, we're all busy. Well, so what I'm doing is I'm getting a bunch of podcasters and people I know together to talk about some of the buying decisions, the experience, the whole process of opening a new iPad, setting it up and stuff like that. And you got to remind me, I honestly don't know. You had an iPad too, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So for you, the upgrade decision is just like me wanting the latest and greatest, or is there something else involved in it?
Yes, greatest and latest. And the biggest thing is I wanted to see what photography was like in this, especially for editing and viewing. That was the biggest driver to me.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, because you do the photography podcast and you're yep. getting more and more into the photography, and the photography apps are kind of taking off, right? We got Photoshop finally on it.
Yeah.
You know, you can talk
yeah.
about whether or not how good a job they've done, but you know, the tablet version or iPad version of Photoshop and now iMovie or iPhoto, excuse me. Of course, Snapseed, which is still one of my personal favorites.
But me too. No, it's interesting because I think that the creation, this is the step to the creation device. This is the creation device. And it's so much different editing a photo using one of these tools with my hands than it is, you know, on the Mac. I mean, it just is.
Yeah.
Just, you know, it feels different. It has a different aesthetic to it. And I think that's so cool because my results tend to be a little more organic on the iPad than they are on the Mac, which is an interesting thing because I'm using a finger or a stylus.
A stylus, yeah. You know, it was funny because when I started playing with the new iPhoto, it took me a while to figure out why it seemed like a lot of the effects in that little brushes section uh-huh. are applied very selectively, like masks. And you know, it was like, oh, what if I want to lighten the whole photo? And
right.
you can do that, but it's not, I don't like how it does it. It's not very intuitive. You can't kind of preview if you want to apply to the whole thing. But it took me a little bit to get and understand the whole sort of brushing on the effect thing to do kind of really selective, interesting effects. And it really seemed to, like you're saying, marry the experience of how you might do this on a tablet. It's almost getting back to some of the old, you start to feel like maybe it's almost back to some of the old film, you know, darkroom techniques where you'd really selectively kind of apply certain things and see what kind of results that you would get.
Right. And I think that's specifically true trying it. Like I tried it yesterday with one of these Nomad brushes, mm-hmm. you know, the ones that actually have the brush. And that is a really interesting thing. So anyways, that's exciting. I think that the glass is getting to the point where it's becoming more sensitive. Obviously, it looks better. So that was the big driver for me this time. I want the new gadget thing, of course.
Right. Right. Well, let's back up a little bit because I want to get to some of the specific features that I'm
sure.
missing. The cameras are going to be one of those things for you. But before we get talking about that, let's talk about storage. A lot of people storage, and do you get the Wi-Fi or the 4G now?
Mm-hmm.
And so for you, what goes into that? What goes into that decision?
I got the 16 gig with the 4G, and
oh, wow.
yep. And to me, the decision was really the flexibility of having the 4G. When I want it, not having it when I don't want it.
Uh-huh.
I used to pay for it all the time. I'm going to give up the whole unlimited plan thing. Who cares? I'm just going to give that up and use it when I need it. And then 16 gig for me, it's the cloud. Now, I know even my wife said, really? And I'm like, yes, let's really think about this. how do I really use this device? So I had to really think about that yesterday when I came back from the backup, and I just did a clean slate. I did a nuke and pave, and I said, now let's think about what I really do in this. Put only that on there, and guess what? I still have 12 gigs left. And yes, images are going to be bigger. Yeah. Yes, there's going to be more video. But a lot of that we get streaming, and I just think this is just fine for the way that I use it. That's not for the way everybody uses it, but I use this device in reality 40% of the time and not 80. So that's it for me.
Yeah, I'm probably about 50-50 at this point. You know, in my case, it's odd because I probably could get away with much smaller if I was willing to manage my apps.
That's it. And I think we're going to at least the attitude I decided to take was, okay, you got to do like the GDT on your iPad content. Like, no, you can't afford to have every uncompressed picture you ever owned on this thing. So be selective. Be selective about what pictures you have. Be selective about what music lives in the device. Be really selective, and you'll be able to get away with a smaller form factor in space. So that was a decision for me.
So let me ask you really about your plan, because I think that's a great point. With more and more stuff moving to the cloud, and especially like for photos now, what happens if you have that photo? Like, how are you going to manage that? So I get the thing, like, I can re-download a photo if I want to work on it. Or what ways are you planning on managing that whole side of it? Because there's not like a full iPhoto or Aperture library in the cloud. Are you going to use Dropbox? Are you going to use some other technology to get at images on the fly?
Yeah, Dropbox is one of them. The one I'm planning to use that I haven't yet, but I really plan to use a lot more, is the actual USB connector, so that if I have my point-and-shoot camera or whatever, maybe that shoots a higher megapixel raw image, I plan to really use this I really want to get that image. I'm on the road. I want to put it in my iPad. So that's how I'll get it there, right from the camera. And then that's going to be uncompressed raw. And I can go all the way up to 19 megapixels. That's plenty big. And then these are pictures that I want to actually do work on to probably send back, eventually to my computer. This is not your Instagram, your casual thing. I love using the iPhone today for you're just like, okay, you shoot something with the iPhone, you do something, with one of the Snapseed, and then you just put it out there.
Yeah,
but now I think we'll see. I'll let you know that I can get a little more serious. I just bought a camera, and I want to put some real pictures that I want to do a little bit more, and I want to see what I can actually get from these editing tools. You know, would I be willing to publish that in 500px as one of my pictures I really like?
Right. Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Have you considered too, like the little devices that are coming out now, like the cloud FTP from HyperDrive? Have you seen that product?
I've seen them. I haven't gone there yet, but because I think there's, like you said, a lot of ways that we can get this stuff over there. Also, the Wi-Fi stuff that's right out there, iFi is very good for that kind of thing. The problem is going to be, how many of those pictures can I have in this device, because I am limiting it in space. And I'm going to say not all of them. I when I first saw the USB, I thought, an iPad 2, I thought, I'll use this all the time. This will be how I transport my pictures when I'm on vacation. Well, the truth is, that's what the SD card's for, and they're pretty cheap to do that with. So now it's like I'm just going to selectively choose images that I want to, on purpose, edit with this device.
Well, yeah, and that now that beaming thing with iPhoto is another great option. So if you have your iPhone, I have my iPhone that has its own storage too. So I can actually beam a photo ad hoc from one device to the other, and that, I played around with that a little bit. So I think you're right. There's becoming more choice, and if you're willing to adjust your thinking and your workflow a little bit, you probably can get a little away with a little less built-in storage and lean heavier on the cloud. But I think you made the good point earlier that it's really going to depend on specifically the type of person that you are, and how you are about managing your stuff, and to how much access you have to the cloud and at any given moment, or if you don't have that, relying on some sort of third party solution like the camera connection kit or the cloud FTP thing, where you can plug a USB drive into a little thing that creates an ad hoc Wi-Fi and get at your stuff. So you just have to think about it a little bit more, I guess.
Yeah, I think you do have to think a little bit more, and that's going to be the trick to it. Yep.
Yeah. So let's talk about features on the iPad 3, you know, beyond just the fact that we're gadget geeks and we want to have the latest and greatest stuff. But I mean, mm-hmm. was there specific things in this version of the iPad that you said, yep, I need to get that for that?
Well, I don't know if it's specific to this iPad, the voiceover capability, being able to, you know, speak my tweets and speak my emails and have it done at such high accuracy rate is very impressive. It is, I think it's the killer app, even more so to me than Siri. Siri is very cool.
Right.
But this is something I can use day in, day out, moment in, moment out.
Yeah, I need to start using that more. I was just playing with that this morning. It's funny you brought up the dictation thing. I'm surprised since the 5.1 update, does it seem faster to you? It seems faster to me in terms of processing stuff.
It absolutely is faster. I have a little bit of an accent, and it so far has been able to pick up things very well, where Siri, you know, doesn't do so well when it comes to those, and it takes quite a bit longer, as you probably know.
Right. So, and as a photographer, do the cameras do anything for you? I mean, do you care, or is that just kind of?
It's incremental. I mean, good. I'm glad that the rear camera is better. The one on the iPad 2 was dismal. It was just terrible. Yeah. You know, and now, you know, if I choose to, I can go ahead and use this device to shoot something casual or whatever. So I wish they would have just gone ahead and put the 4S camera in. I don't understand why they didn't. I guess they got to upsell us later.
Right.
But, you know, from that perspective, it's an okay device. I'm more interested in the processing power and the graphical processing power when it comes to photography and, you know, gaming. I'm not a big gamer, but for those who are.
So let's talk about the photography thing a little bit. I'm talking to Jeff Gamet a little bit later because he noticed and pointed out something, and I think it's just starting to surface now. The color gamut on this display, while the Retina is really gorgeous, it does seem to be different. I don't know if we've come up with a verdict yet on whether or not it's good or bad or something that Apple will need to address or adjust, but it seems warmer, and some people are commenting that it's very yellow.
Yeah, I was going to go there. I hope you said it seems warmer because Jeff is the graphics guy, and so are you.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, it, you know, if you're looking at white balance, that arrow is pointing towards the right. It does have an overall hue of not even yellow, but more gold, I would call it.
Right.
You know, even when you're on your home screen, it has that. And so I'm sure somebody will measure what that actually is. But again, I guess I have to be a little bit of a optimist here. I hope that people aren't out there using their iPad as, you know, magazine quality color correction tool. I don't think we're there yet, or it's meant to be used that way. I think there's a lot of factors that get into that. Primarily having to have things look decent outside, and that there's some compensation that has to be made in the gamma setting for where this device is used more often under fluorescence lights or under outside where you might be under very harsh lighting conditions.
Right.
That's going to depend on the profile. So I think that we're, you know, again, it's the 95-5 rule. I think they're going to engineer the thing to the 95%.
Well, yeah, but I mean, so does that concern you as someone who's talking about, you know, doing more content on it and maybe editing more photos and things like that? And then also the follow-up to that would be, do you think it's maybe time that Apple starts to realize this is moving to a content creation device, and maybe they do need to give those of us who care about that sort of thing or want to use it in that way a little more control like they've done on the desktop? If we're truly making this transition from PC to post-PC, I think it's with this version of the device, it seems to me like it's maybe time for them to start thinking that, oh yeah, people are going to be doing a lot more content creation on these, and maybe pros are going to need to be able to adjust their gamut settings, you know, their gamma settings for editing photos, say.
No, you're right, and there's more iPads to come. That's what I have to say about that. I think that as a person who shoots in RAW primarily, mm-hmm. which gives you the ability to change that on the fly, even if I bring an image into this thing in RAW and work on it on something, and, you know, before I publish that image, I'm going to go back home and put it into my converter and make sure that it is adjusted to my screen, especially if I'm in the business of doing that, because I can always correct it again later. I'm still in RAW. I haven't compressed it. I don't have to live with that. So that's the perspective I take. I think for a consumer, you know, they probably don't care about where the gamma is that much at all. I just have to be truthful about that.
Right. Right. All right. Well, cool. I want to thank you for taking the time out of your day and chatting with us. So I know a lot of people know you from the show, but remind everybody where they can find you and what you're up to. And I think you said you just kicked off a new show too, right?
Yes, very niche. Normally, typicalmacuser.com. Come on over. We have a great community of people there. If you're into overall photography, typicalshutterbug.com is where I interview just the most amazing professionals that teach me how to become a better photographer, and you get to listen in. And then just now, I'm starting a new show called Rangefinder Moment at rangefindermoment.com. This is a niche show for those people who like to shoot the kind of camera that's called a rangefinder, like a Fuji, you know, and this is a little bit more of a show about how to shoot in that specific format that brings its own little niche thing. So if you're one of those, come on over and join us.
I love the fact that you're getting deeper into your hobby. I think that's great. Thanks, Victor. Hey, Jeff.
Hey.
How's it going?
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, my fingers are actually a little sore from playing with a new iPad so much over the past couple days.
Have you been using it a lot? Because, I mean, it's only been, what, it came out Friday, so it's Saturday now, afternoon, I guess it is. So maybe about 24 hours. When did yours show up?
So mine showed up while I was doing Mac Observer's on location coverage.
Oh, okay.
For the launch. So when I actually got to get it and then take it out of the box and start playing with it, yeah, I guess it has been about 24 hours.
Okay. So you were actually at an Apple store yesterday morning. So actually, I haven't asked anybody who had been at a store yet. What was the crowd like? What was the vibe like? And did you get any sense of what people were buying? If they were first time buyers, new buyers, or upgrading, what have you?
Okay, it was high energy. Everyone was really excited to be there, which makes sense because everyone was there to get the new iPad. Mm-hmm. I showed up about an hour before the store opened, and I was at the Flatiron Crossing store, which is in Broomfield, Colorado. And yeah, so about 50 people when I showed up an hour before they opened the doors.
Oh, wow.
Which, you know, I didn't know what to expect because we all broke the internet a week ago trying to buy iPads yeah. right away.
Yeah.
Yeah. So by the time they opened the doors, the line was maybe about 100 people long.
Okay. That sounds like most stores seem to be about that crowd level. And to me, just based on past events, correct me if I'm wrong, that seems a little lighter than normal launches or other launches. I guess there is no normal launch, right?
No, there's no normal launch. But I'm thinking this is more in line with what the normal launch trend is now, because Apple does let everyone do the pre-ordering.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, geez, I can't even imagine how many iPads were delivered just in the United States yesterday.
Yeah.
Well, it's insane.
Right. And they also simultaneously launched, I think, in more countries than they ever had. I kind of got a sense that maybe some of the in-store stuff too was the fact that because it was launching internationally, there were always certain buyers who would come in to buy and then ship them to friends and family who want them overseas, too.
Sure.
Yeah, so maybe there wasn't some of that going on. I don't know. It seemed when I went I went the night before just to see if people were lining up, and there was about 7 people in line at the Carlsbad store in, you know, just north of San Diego. And almost everybody was upgrading from a 2, 2, or 3. So did you ask anybody if they were upgrading or if they were a new buyer? There's only one first-time buyer in line the night before. But, you know, fanatics are usually the ones who are there that early.
Right. Okay, so for the early people, I'll call it the first 50, mm-hmm. the majority of those were upgrading.
Mm-hmm.
The 100 or so that bought iPads right away after the store opened, by that point it was a mix.
Mm-hmm.
And then and they were able to actually clear through the people in line fairly quickly, but then it was just a steady stream of people coming in after that, and a lot of those people were first-time buyers.
Yeah, and they must have good supply because I haven't heard of sellouts yet, although I haven't been browsing the internet too much today. So
What I heard is that the Apple stores were very well stocked for this event, and stocked well enough that unless something goes crazy today, meaning Saturday or tomorrow on Sunday, they've got enough inventory to get through the weekend. At least a lot of the locations do.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's going to be your best bet if your local big box store or something like that ran out of them. And that was the other thing on this launch that I think probably helped with the crowds, is they were selling devices in more retail locations, at least in the States. I think also at least in Australia and maybe over in the UK. I don't know about Germany or some of those other places. But,
yeah,
you know, that you here you had Walmart and Target and Radio Shack and Sam's Club and... I don't know how many other retailers. They didn't. Those places, from what I understand, didn't have a lot of supply, but...
But they had something.
But they had something, which that's a little bit more unusual. Okay, so let's talk about which model you bought and why. And you're upgrading... Are you upgrading from a 2?
I upgraded from a 2.
Okay. Oh, and I also wanted to ask you, did you get a sense of the people who were upgrading? Were they going from 2s to 3s or 1s to or 3s? Third generation or two to, I forget what I just said. Were they upgrading?
But one? I know what you mean.
Yeah.
It was actually a nice mix of people upgrading from first gen and iPad 2s to the new iPad.
Yeah. I kind of noticed the same thing. It seems like it's kind of split. And with the early adopters, you'd think there might be more two to third generation. Right. I'm never going to get that one right, I don't think.
I got chastised in the Apple store yesterday. Because I kept talking about iPad 3, knowing full well that's not what it's called.
Yeah, I just keep saying the new iPad. That's how I keep referring to it. So,
and I'm working on saying that too.
So then, so which model did you buy, and did you get the 4G or not?
I did not get 4G. I went with 64 gig black Wi-Fi. Mm-hmm. And so when I bought my original iPad, I bought the Wi-Fi only model as an experiment. And I figured if it turns out that I actually need the 3G, well, I'll just buy a new one, sell the one that I bought, and call it good. Mm-hmm. And I never actually needed to. So then when it came time to buy an iPad 2, since I had gone a whole year where there was like one time where having 3G would have been handy, but it wasn't a huge problem, I thought, okay, I'll stick with Wi-Fi. And... in that second year with the iPad 2, I think there's one instance where having 3G would have been a little handy, but wasn't a big deal. So when iPad new rolled around, I just couldn't justify going with 4G LTE.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. Although I do my backup for those times that you're talking about, where it's just once in a while, is I have an Android phone that's on Virgin, that's pay as you go, $25 a month data, and I can use that as a hotspot. So that's mine in a pinch. And beyond that, I think, you know, you and I both are working, I think, most of the time out of our homes or at a local coffee shop or something that has Wi-Fi. So
right,
pretty easy to work that out. So storage wise, you're on the higher end. It's funny, as I've been doing these interviews, it seems like people are either 16 or 64, and not a lot in the middle. So it seems like people are starting to fall into these two camps of, you know, I can get away with less, or no, I need a ton.
You know, my first gen was 64. My iPad 2 was 32, mm-hmm. but I wanted 64. And I just wasn't able to get a hold of a 64 gig right away. And I needed to have one, like, immediately so that we could do our review at TMO. Mm-hmm. So I went with the 32 and then spent the next year very closely monitoring my storage because I kept running out. So I knew when I bought my third gen iPad, it would have to be 64 again.
And what is eating up your storage, just out of curiosity?
Applications primarily and data to go along with those applications. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I have two movies that just stay on my iPad so that I don't have to think about remembering to put a movie on if I'm going to be on a flight or if I just get stuck somewhere and I need to have a nice diversion. And and then the rest of it, it's applications, the data for the applications. I have some photos and a little bit of music. And now I have breathing room again.
Yeah. So I guess you got to see maybe the iPad before you actually unboxed your own. What was kind of the first thing that you were eager to kind of try out and test out? And beyond that first thing, what are you most looking forward to? Or maybe you've already played around with, what was the kind of the big feature that you were really personally interested in? Because those can be two things or the same thing. I don't know.
Well, okay. So the thing that I wanted to see first and was really excited to see, and the thing that I really wanted to play with the most, mm-hmm. was the new display.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a lot of us are in that same boat.
Yeah. And sitting there looking at this sea of iPads in the Apple Store, where it looked like someone had printed off images from a really high resolution printer, and then backlit them on the iPads, mm-hmm. I was just blown away because the image quality was that good, and I was just so impressed with what I was seeing. The text is so nice that all of a sudden, my iPad 2 seemed crappy. And the iPad 2 has a fantastic display.
Yeah, it's really good. It's amazing how quickly you forget.
Yes, yes. And then the other thing that I really wanted to try out, just because it's kind of a nice loose gauge of overall performance, I needed to see how syncing worked.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, well, see, if you compare first gen to iPad 2 syncing, it was like night and day, because the iPad 2 has much better performance overall, and so you ended up getting substantially faster sync times. So when I plugged the new iPad into my Mac and said, hey, restore from the backup, I have an iTunes, and I figured this will take a couple hours, and it comes up and it says 9 minutes. I'm glad I was sitting down at the time.
So this is syncing over Bluetooth, USB, excuse me.
Syncing over USB, yes.
Yeah.
So it was substantially faster yet again. And I was really pleased with that because I didn't know what type of rough performance improvement I would see, because we're going from the A5 to the A5X processor. And one of the huge improvements in that is actually the graphics. So I didn't know if I'd see much of an improvement with the actual syncing. And yes, I did.
Yeah. Beyond the syncing, have you played around with performance, just comparison between the 2 and the 3, just on normal, everyday kind of tasks? Because I've seen now a couple videos, but I'm curious if you had played around with that yet.
I've noticed that web surfing is substantially faster, mm-hmm. on the new iPad. And a lot of places where I was seeing real sluggish performance, like if you go to email a photo to someone. One problem that I've consistently had on the first gen and the iPad 2 was that the new email would start, you'd see the image in there, and you tap on the 2 field, mm-hmm. and nothing happens. And pretty soon I get pissed off and I'm just banging on my screen like that's going to help. and then the keyboard pops up. So there was a lag, real noticeable performance issue there. And I'm not having that on the new iPad.
Oh, interesting. I hadn't really noticed that. Yeah, what I had been seeing is that it seems like most of the standard operations, like launching an app or switching between apps and those sorts of things, in the few demos I've seen, seem to be pretty on par, those common everyday tasks. And I have a feeling when we start really drilling in, where the new iPad is going to shine a little bit more is more on the heavier processing side of things, especially on the graphics side with photo editing and video and those sorts of things. But
yes. That's what I'm expecting.
But it's interesting to see that you did see some performance improvements in just common tasks like sending an email.
Yes, and the performance improvements that I saw were in areas where I was really glad to see them, because they've been annoyances for me since day one.
Yeah, they just kind of slow you down when you're doing a trend. And sometimes people think, well, that's kind of that's a minor thing. Big deal if it takes 3 seconds for the keyboard to pop up versus popping up right away. But when you're doing that a lot, when you're sending a lot of emails, and that's something that you rely on, I mean, the impact of the long term of that is the net effect is big, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
So, yeah. So if we say on the iPad 2, the lag that I was experiencing plus the mini temper tantrum I would have each time, let's say that I, on average, would send about 3 images a day. That's about 30 seconds a day, I would say, mm-hmm. that's immediately lost. And you do that 5 days a week, and then you do that every week for the year, pretty much. That 30 second a day lag suddenly becomes really substantial.
Yeah, really significant. Okay, so let's talk a little bit more about tasks then, because you know I think one of the things that I love about the iPad and why I think it's become so popular is that it's not just one thing to any one person, and I think it goes into sort of the decisions like you're talking about, like you getting a 64, me getting a 64, because we deal with a lot of apps and a lot of app data. So I mean that's really why I had to. Which surprised me because I thought it would have been movie or TV content, but now since so much of that has gone to the cloud, you could just re-download that stuff. I'm really able to clear that off, but I was still filling up space with all these applications. But you and I are in a position where we have to test apps, we have to try things out. So I have a lot of things on my iPad that maybe won't stay there, but that's constantly cycling. So sure. What are other kinds of common tasks that you're finding you're using your iPad for? We talked about email, that you're excited, you know, with this new one to kind of gain some of that productivity stuff and the kinds of apps that maybe went into your buying decision.
All right. So we've talked about email. I'm really glad that Mobile Safari performance is noticeably better for me mm-hmm. because I do so much research just for my iPad because I can do it anywhere I am.
Yeah, me too. That's become a very common use case for me.
So that's been a big thing. Instapaper is a service that I use a lot. And I noticed that on the new iPad, getting all of my Instapaper content to load, because it caches everything.
Right.
That was markedly faster than on my iPad 2. And I would like to think that Reader on the new iPad is loading content faster, but I can't tell.
Right.
For sure.
Yeah, that's a feature I started to use a lot more. So, and I think it's important to point out, I mean, if you're the type of person who's going to be dealing with reading a lot of text a lot every day to do your research, to do papers, whatever it might be, the screen is a huge difference, I think, in the long run, just on eye strain.
Oh, yes.
Those sorts of things. And you wouldn't, like you were saying, you wouldn't think that the old screen is not bad in any way, shape, or form. It's great. But I think it's just going to be that much better.
So. Yeah, for tech stuff, it's crazy just what a difference the two displays have. And I can tell already that I'm going to be much happier doing all of that text-based research on the iPad, on the new iPad, as opposed to the iPad 2.
Yeah. What about imaging for you? Because I know you deal with images and photographs and things like that. Do you think that's going to have an impact there? Or is that something still you're going to have to let live on the desktop?
I'm getting closer to being able to do serious image editing on the iPad because we now have iPhoto on the iPad. And that's remarkably useful. And then we have Photoshop Touch, mm-hmm. which handles some of the... well, what I like to call the bread and butter Photoshop things that I need to do, like being able to extract the background out of an image and throw a couple layers together, put a drop shadow on something.
Yep.
And I can do that on the iPad too. And based on my tests so far on the new iPad, I don't know if it's any faster. I haven't done enough yet.
Yeah.
But the fact that overall my system doesn't feel sluggish in comparison, that's a good thing.
Yeah. Now, I know one thing you had told me about, and we had kind of been back and forth with on Friday, I believe it was, is you noticed when you got home and we were kind of working with yours that the new iPad has a very much a different color gamma. And that may be a hindrance in moving to being able to actually use the iPad as a production tool for you.
Yeah, that as far as graphics editing goes, it actually might be a showstopper. That's how radical the color shift is for me.
And so can you tell everybody what we kind of talked about and what you noticed?
Sure. Okay. So what I noticed is that if you just look at a new iPad screen without any other devices around for comparison, you look at it and go, holy crap, it's bright, it's vibrant, it's beautiful, and it is. But then if you take an iPad 2 and set it beside the new iPad and you look at the exact same image, the iPad 2 almost has a bluish tint in comparison, and the new iPad has a very noticeable yellow tint.
Right.
And what I've noticed is that a lot of people are looking at the new iPad going, oh, the colors are warmer. Well, yeah, it's because the color is skewed way yellow to the point that the sample image that I've been using for a lot of this color checking for the yellow shift, which will actually be in my review, it's oranges. And it's a photo that I took, and I know exactly what the color should look like, and it looks pretty much it's as close to dead on as you're going to get on an iPad, on the iPad 2. On the new iPad, it looks like I took a photograph of lemons.
Yeah. It's much more in that yellow space. You sent it to me to kind of look at. Now, one thing I just noticed this morning, because I was reading, and when you first told me about this, my first test was to open up, you know, some sort of reader application, some sort of text application where I knew I was going to have a big white background. And just to try and see if I could see, you know, what tonal range the whites were falling in. And you can definitely see that it's much more on the yellow side versus the blue side of the iPad 2. I always kind of felt like the iPad 2 was almost too cool. But
you know, and the funny thing is about that, if you hold up an original iPad to an iPad 2 and look at the same image, the iPad 2 appears as if it has a yellow cast. And I remember being really concerned about the yellow shift on the iPad 2. And now we look at it and think, man, that's really blue.
Yeah. And so I didn't really notice it too bad. And then this morning, what I noticed was there's also angle that comes into play here with the screen. And I don't know if it's the IPS technology or what it is, but I've noticed the same thing with my laptop LCD. You know, when you start to get off angle, it gets even more extreme.
Yes.
Toward that yellow range. And I'm thinking about how most people use their iPads on their laps. So I didn't notice it till it was on my lap. Whereas when I was kind of working yesterday and looking at things, I had it on a stand in my office next to my computer. So it wasn't as pronounced. So, you know, I think there's a lot of factors that go into this. So the follow-up question to all of that is, you know, as a production artist or someone who works with this sort of thing, I mean, we're always dealing with it. I asked Victor Kayao a little bit if he thought, is it maybe time that Apple, now that these have moved from the point where they've kind of been consumption devices, where we actually now are seeing people really starting to produce content on it, is it time that maybe we get some sort of tool or some sort of way in software to adjust that color gamut, you know, so we can customize it for our specific application?
And my answer is absolutely. And we've needed it since the first iPad shipped.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it wouldn't be that hard to do, to put that kind of control into it. I mean, it's built on OS X, and you have to wonder maybe why Apple hasn't done that yet.
Apple works in mysterious ways. Now, here's the upside to the color shift that, for me, might be an image editing showstopper. Uh-huh. What I ended up doing was going back to the Apple Store and loading up the same image on several iPads. And I lined them all up side by side, and the color was as close to dead on consistent from device to device as you could hope for.
Well, that's a good thing.
Yeah, so that's a good thing. So what that tells me is, if Apple decides, oh yeah, this dramatic yellow shift is a problem, they can do a software update and fix it. My fear, though, is that they they did serious research into what colors please the average consumer, meaning the type of consumer that doesn't know what to look for in color.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
And that's what this display is.
Yeah. You code to that, and that makes absolute sense. I think Victor brought that up. You know, it's the whole 90% rule. You know, for most people's applications, your average consumer who's shooting photographs and then looking at them on the iPad, they're going to go, this looks great. This is beautiful. This is a great looking image. And it's that other smaller percentage that, you know, they often don't cater to. But I think they may have to, because these devices are finding their own applications. And there's certain people that are going to want to be able to have that. And the other reason to have it, though, too, is depending on your environment, right? Those colors are going to be different whether I'm sitting outside, you know, at a Starbucks, or I'm in under fluorescent lights, or I'm sitting next to a window, or, you know, all of those things. So you really can't just set, if you are going to be doing color work and photo editing and things like that, you can't just set one medium range, because in one situation, this gamma might be right, or this tone, and in another situation, it needs to be something completely different.
Right. But, you know, if we could at least dial back that yellow some, I think that would help a lot. I mean, right now, yeah. if I edit an image on my iPad 3 and in iPhoto, if I do some color adjustments and then do color adjustments on my iPad 2 on the same image and then print them out, which I haven't had a chance to do yet. That's later today. I'm expecting that the images won't look alike. And if I take those images and drop them onto my cinema display, and I have the 23-inch cinema display before it was glossy, so I can actually get accurate color. I'm expecting when I put those two images side by side on my cinema display that I'll be able to tell which image was edited on which iPad.
Well, I am very curious to hear about that and hear that report. And I'm assuming that's something you're writing up for TMO? Hopefully.
Yes, this will all be part of my review. That's kind of, since Friday afternoon, that's pretty much become my life, doing everything I possibly can to this iPad so that I can get a good review out for our readers.
Well, cool. I think this went way more into the graphics side of things than I was expecting, but that's what's great about these conversations. It's like I said, everybody has their own applications and reasons for the iPad, and I think these conversations help everybody kind of make their decisions on what they're going to do and what they're going to buy. So I want to thank you for taking some time out of your schedule to do that. And so if people do want to read that and find out all that stuff and see some of the other stuff that you do, where should they go? Tell them about Mac Observer, I guess.
That sounds like a great idea. All right, yeah. Go over to macobserver.com, and that's where you'll find what I'm writing, along with a bunch of other fantastic writers. And, you know, and people should also listen to the podcast we're on.
Yeah.
We have Communicators. We do that with Michael Johnston.
Yeah, it's a podcast all about iOS devices. So, you know, much more focused on that and those sort of things than the MacCast is. You know, although more and more these days, MacCast should have maybe been called the iOS cast. I don't know. Well, it doesn't roll off the tongue the same way.
No. And right now, sure, it's more of an iOS focus because that's the new stuff Apple is giving us. But give it a couple months and then it could be the MacCast again, I'm thinking.
Switch back. So. Yeah. And you're on Twitter too, right?
Yes, I'm on Twitter. My Twitter name is Jay Gamut. And I should give people a fun thing.
Okay.
My blog that I've started doing about what I see in coffee shops, Fresh Brewed Tales.
Oh, I don't even know about that one yet.
Oh, go check it out. I think you'll enjoy it.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Jeff.
And thank you for having me on.
Hey, so I did run right out and check out Jeff's blog. There are some interesting things you can learn just doing a little people watching at a Starbucks. So nice job, Jeff. And if you want to check that out, certainly do. I hope you enjoyed this episode as well. Before I leave you, I do want to take a quick moment and thank all of my show sponsors. Pharonix, makers of Deep Freeze. You can check out their software. Get more information and details over at pharonix.com. Circus Ponies, check out Notebook. Get a free download and more information at circusponies.com. Smile, check out Text Expander, PDF Pen, Disc Label, PDF Pen for the iPad, and Text Expander Touch. All those great products you can get information on, as well as free trials for their Mac apps over at smilesoftware.com. And Gazelle, get cash for that old iPhone, that old iPad. iPod, and even your Android device. You can do a simple search over at gazelle.com and get a cash offer. It's quick and easy. And a big thank you to all of my sponsors for their support of the MacCast. Big thank you to you for your support. If you have a comment, a question, maybe you want to know something about that new iPad you just picked up, or anything Mac and Apple related, you can send those emails and audio comments to MacCast@gmail.com, or you can call in on the listener hotline. That's at 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IAM-9. Or if you prefer, leave voicemail on Skype. My Skype address is the MacCast. And if you need show notes, links to stuff I talk about in the episodes, you can get those on the MacCast website. That's at MacCast.com. And while you're there, be sure to check out the forum. And also, you can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast, or check out the MacCast Facebook page, facebook.com/TheMacCast. And over on Facebook, you'll find those unboxing photos and the video I did as well of the new iPad. So you can check all of that out. And until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.